Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Bill Tinker, and you're listening to Dialysis Talk on Blog Talk Radio, where we discuss the healthcare issue of dialysis patients along with other present-day healthcare issues. Dialysis Talk is brought to you by Dialysis Advocates. The information and opinions expressed by our guests are theirs alone and do not reflect the opinion of Dialysis Talk or Dialysis Advocates. We have a great show lined up for you tonight, and with that, let's turn it over to tonight's host.
Hello, everyone. This is Carol, and I am so blessed to be here and blessed to have so many people listening tonight and willing to participate in our show. Tonight's show is a somber show, but it's a show that I hope proves to be effective. There are a lot of people waiting that have a story that they want to tell about their loved ones and the problems that they faced in the dialysis center. One of our first guests, her name is Karen. Karen,
hi.
Are you on the line?
Hi, Karen.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Well, I'm turning it over to you so you can talk to everyone about your precious child and what happened to them in dialysis.
Okay, thank you. I have a son that was a dialysis patient for several years, and he's no longer here. The PCT and the dialysis clinic here in Tualatin, Oregon, in Fresenius, caused him an injury. It ended up taking his life. They discharged him and said that he was fine. And they have a real big problem with the people that work and actually perform the dialysis procedure on the patients. The PCTs are, in my opinion, not qualified to do the job that they're doing. And it's affecting and actually literally killing patients. And something needs to be done. They need to be regulated, monitored, and supervised by somebody that's not associated with their own company.
And, Can you give us a little overview about your son, about his health going into dialysis and how it affected him throughout his treatment?
Yes, every time he came out of dialysis, he always felt sick. He did not feel well. He felt just totally, he had to rest and recuperate from dialysis every time. It just made him sick. It just zapped his energy. Other than that, on his off dialysis days, you would not even know that he was a dialysis patient. You know, he was very energetic, you know, on days where he felt good, when he didn't have dialysis, always riding his bicycle, always involved with helping other people do things, and a very, you know, very energetic person. But on dialysis days, it just drained him.
Yeah.
And
How long was he on?
He was on dialysis 3 days a week, 4 hours a day.
How long had he been on as a total?
On dialysis,
years?
About 7.5 years.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. And it just seemed like his health kind of like a domino effect, like they had one incident, and all of a sudden, boy, he's got high blood pressure. So they start treating him with blood pressure medication, one to go up, one to go down, and then he ended up with thyroid problem. It's just like a domino effect. His health was deteriorating right in front of their eyes. And all he wanted was a transplant, which he was denied.
Had he been placed on the list for a transplant?
He was denied a kidney transplant. He had a sibling that was willing to donate a kidney. They had never, in those 7.5 years, got as far as testing, make sure that they were compatible. They never even did that. And originally when they said my son was not able to get a transplant, they wanted him to live in his own home and have a job and be self-sufficient. They did not want him to live at home with his family. And, you know, it just never happened that he got a transplant. Never even made the waiting list. But yet they can spend tens and tens of thousands of dollars on medication given to him over the years, which was actually more expensive than anti-rejection medication.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like I said, something needs to be done because they're injuring people, they're hurting people, they're killing people, and it's destroying not just that person's life, it's destroying that person's family.
And we want you to know you are not alone. It's so many people that this is happening to all over the country. Zabeth, are you there?
Yes. Can they hear me? Hello?
Are you listening? Hi, Zabeth.
Hello?
We have Karen. Hi.
Can
Hello.
You hear
Can
me
you hear
now?
Me? Yes, I hear you well.
Okay.
We have Karen. Yeah, have you been listening?
Yes.
Okay. Zabeth, this is Karen that's on the line. She, I'm sure you've heard her story. Karen, Zabeth has a story similar to yours. Zabeth, would you like to talk some about your loved one?
Well, my brother was on dialysis somewhere, I think, around 10, 12 years. And the last 5 years at the same clinic. And he was mentally challenged, so he lived with me. And I was his caregiver, you know, all that, caretaker, and watched out for his rights of a mentally challenged person, some schizophrenia. And so I just lost him December 21st, but I had noticed he wasn't right the week before. They used the wrong part of his fistula after being told what to do, and I found he was draggy all that week, and I kept calling him up thinking maybe he was anemic. Anyway, December, that was December the 13th, Friday, so it was a week later. It was supposed to be a typical Friday. He went 3 days a week, about 3.5 hours each day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So we're still in shock because he lived with us, and we were always together. But that Friday, my routine, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Can anybody
yes.
hear me? Oh,
yes.
Okay. So that Friday, my routine was to call and see when he would be ready. And it was usually 20 minutes. And when I went, I called, and I said, is Robert ready? Oh, yes, he's ready. And in a second, she went, oh, wait a minute, his oxygen levels are low. So I went in. My brother was laying out flat. He had white foam on his lips. And a quiet voice said, we think your brother should go to the hospital. And I asked my brother, which they all heard his answer because they were standing closer than me. And I asked him what he wanted, and he said he wanted a cup of warm tea and he wanted to go to Melrose. And they all know Melrose meant his primary care hospital, and on a Friday night at 5, it would have taken me a good hour or better. And he couldn't walk out. They got me a wheelchair. No one helped me. I put him in the back of my car, and I didn't know he was dying. And I had to pull over when he wouldn't answer me and call an ambulance. And we ended up at a hospital close by that nobody knew him. And here's my insight. The insight was these three different hospital doctors came into the ICU at different times. He was on like six machines, and he was in an induced coma. And one doctor said to us, all I can say from all these readings of the machines, it had to be a traumatic event. And then a second doctor questioned us and wanted to know, well, when's the last time your brother had dialysis? I said, yesterday. And he said, well, it's hard to believe from all the readings of these machines that your brother had dialysis yesterday. So we didn't think much of that. But as time has gone by, we've decided that he probably didn't get his whole treatment. And then the last doctor came in and announced that all he could guarantee was, again, from the readings of all his machines, that he did not have a heart attack. So with after everything being said and done, we're still in trying to find out answers. And we just learned something new from a forensic person that when they asked if I had had an autopsy, and I did, at a hospital. And I said, but nothing showed up. And I just learned something. The forensic person asked me who did it. Said it was done by medical. And her answer was, no wonder they didn't find anything. It wasn't done by a forensic person. Did anybody know that? You find out different things? Hello?
No, I really
think Karen
didn't.
Did.
I didn't know.
Yeah,
and
Karen
so
did.
That was a new thing. I guess if it's a forensic person, they're going to investigate differently than a medical. Just, I think, does a general, you know?
They probably go more in detail.
Yeah, that's what mm-hmm. she said. But when she said, oh, no wonder, I said, what do you mean? She says, well, if it was done at a hospital, it was done medically, she said, they look for different things than we do. So we're still trying to find out answers, but when I look back and I hear everyone's story about how you have to defend yourself in the middle of your treatment when they want to give incorrect meds, it makes me... I'm surprised at all that, but it also makes me realize that my mentally challenged brother didn't stand a chance, because if you went by and said, hey, Robert, we're going to do this, he would have said okay. And then when I discovered a paper that with his name on it that they wanted him to sign, you know how they say if you, you know, you don't want to stay in a medical thing, how you have to sign a paper that you're going against there?
Yes.
It's,
A&A.
Well,
yeah.
When I saw this paper, I said, Robert, what were you trying to do? Get out of the machine early? He goes, no, they gave me a lollipop and said they needed my machine because they were running late. And all that week, because I was his healthcare proxy, legal, everything, I had been asking for a paper to show me from that Friday, the 13th, when it took him a whole hour to come out. And the nurse kept saying, oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes, and she didn't. And then the day after he passed, I asked for it again, and they said, if you want his paperwork, you're going to have to go to the whiz. DeVita's home office in Texas and hung up on me. But I did manage to get, which tells me nothing, the whole copy of the ICU records. So I feel, I was just in a grief. I don't know if anyone's ever been in a grief group.
No.
Karen, have you?
Yeah, I can hear her.
Karen, are you still there?
I'm still here.
I was in a grief
recently.
You know, a grief. and with 12 other women, and see, they all had a complete picture. You know, the husband died of cancer, and the son died of a heart attack. But I don't have a complete picture, and it makes you feel, I think, different than other kinds of deaths.
True.
Karen, have you participated in any grief groups?
Yeah.
Did you find them helpful?
I've just taken all this in. It's just so sad. Something could be prevented, and it's allowed to happen, and it just continues. There is no end to the grief for a death that should never have happened.
Yes,
exactly.
but I felt differently than the others in the group, but I like to share, and I found on Facebook a page called Grief, the Unspoken, and I find it very consoling reading their stories.
Awesome. I'll have to check that out. I've never heard of them. I'd like to check them out. You say a Facebook page?
Yeah, Grief, the Unspoken.
Okay.
And a lot of people
post
their stories and their poems, and I find they're very consoling. And they talk about grief. Grief is a personal thing. I've had people say, aren't you over it yet? I don't think it's anyone's business how you grieve. Right? It's a personal, private.
Each incident
is
different.
It is private.
It's very private.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is private. I have one more person that I've only spoken to shortly. Her name is Jewel. Jewel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Jewel. Would you like to talk about your loved one and the incident that occurred around their death?
He'd been on dialysis about 7-8 months, and he had lost a lot of weight, of course, and he had had a fistula put in so that my sister would be able to do the dialysis, you know, herself, so we could get back home. They were living in Las Vegas, and we wanted to walk home to Texas so we could help. And he and I were talking on the phone, and oh my God, if I got to go, they're bringing Dawn out in a wheelchair. And so the nurse, her name was Cilo, and this is with Florencia, and she came out and she said he took a look. He's fine. He's not hurt. You just need to take him home and take him to bed. And there was two, we're not really sure who it was. It was not anyone that worked for the center, but two guys there. I believe that they were drivers of ambulances that had dropped off someone that when he fell, they just picked him up. Put him in a wheelchair underneath, you know, Felix. Put him up in there. He just kept saying he's fine.
I can't hear you. It sounds like paper.
Somebody shuffling paper, yeah. I could hear that.
Yeah, because I really want to hear your story. So it was the ambulance, and he fell, and they put him in a wheelchair?
No, they never called an ambulance. There was
just like my brother, they should have called one.
They did not call an ambulance. They told Nancy, my sister, to take him and put him in a wheelchair, take him home and put him to bed. By the time, they were about 10 minutes from home, and by the time they got there, she knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
So she started trying to get him into their friend's car because she couldn't get him into a vehicle, so she had help. And so she got him into a friend's car, and they took him, rushed him right on to the hospital. And he died within about an hour to an hour and a half because he had a perforated liver.
Oh, at least you know that. Wow.
So, in other words, you know, it's very upsetting to us. Had she said, had they done the proper thing and called an ambulance when he fell, because we found out later that his blood pressure took a dive.
Yeah, same with my brother. Go ahead. It sounds similar.
If they had been monitoring his blood pressure appropriately, they would have known that something was wrong, and before he fell. The fall. The fall was what perforated his liver. But they should have taken him to the hospital rather than telling my sister to put him in the car and take him home.
Yes, yes.
What company was this?
Fresenius.
Fresenius?
Mm-hmm. Fresenius.
Oh, that's how you pronounce it, Fresenius.
Yeah. Your son was with your brother. I'm sorry, your brother was with what, DeVita?
Oh, my brother was, well, he was probably with different ones, because when he would be at different hospitals, sometimes they would be at the Fresenius company. But this one here was DeVita. But it's similar to Jewel's brother's story.
Karen,
yeah, but he had to sleep. My brother couldn't walk out. I had
Karen,
to get him a wheelchair.
Pierced your son's heart with the catheter, didn't they?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They disconnected him from the dialysis procedure, the PCT. He developed a sudden sharp pain when they disconnected him, and he told them that, and they checked him out, and they said that he was fine, just go home. And he came home. I believe them because that's what they told him. They discharged him.
Yeah.
They're experts, and so I believe that, you know, these experts
know
that he was fine, and he was not fine. He passed away. I found him on the floor. It was a sudden, unexpected, unsupervised death, and the doctor refused to do an autopsy. And I had a private autopsy done, and it was confirmed that the catheter pierced a hole in my son's heart.
I bet that's, yeah. I have a question of Karen and Jewel. Karen, how many years was your son on dialysis?
About 7.5.
7.5. And Jewel? Hello?
Hello, Jewel? Jewel, are you still there? It's showing up that she's there.
Jewel.
We'll get
Hello?
Back to her. Hi, Jewel, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Oh, now we can. I was asking, what was it, your brother?
It was my brother-in-law. It's my sister.
Oh,
husband.
Now how many years on dialysis?
He was only on dialysis about 8 months.
Oh.
We had him in DeVita to begin with. DeVita was not pulling enough fluid off, and he was going into basically like cardiac arrest because the fluid was engulfing his body.
Say and that again about the fluid.
The fluid, they weren't pulling enough fluid off of his body.
Oh, I'm writing this.
It was kind of engulfing, you know, it was like, and so he wasn't able to breathe. So
was he walking slower, or did you see a difference in him?
Yeah, there was definitely a difference when they weren't pulling enough fluid off.
No, like was he dragging around, tired?
He was tired all the time, yeah.
Okay. Because my brother was like that the last week after they used the wrong pot. See, they would. My brother had had two stents put in, you know, when they do the fistulogram.
Right.
And they blow up the vein, and if it collapses a couple of times. So he had had two stents put in at the Melrose a month and a half before, and they were told by the surgeon that they were supposed to stop using his fistula above the elbow and only use below. So we figured the 13th, when it took over an hour for him to come out, I said, Robert, what took so long? Because of Friday, he knew he was going to get a steak sub, you know, on Fridays?
Yeah.
For good behavior, but I did that whether he was good or not. And I said, Robert, what took so long? He said they went in the wrong part of my fistula, and I told them not to. But, you see, I have a double-edged sword going because that's really taken advantage of the mentally challenged person.
A mentally challenged, yes.
You know?
Yes.
My son also
fluid.
Had a problem
they
with that swelling in his food.
What? I didn't hear you. Your son what?
Oh.
Are y'all talking to me?
Can I say something?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Who is
regarding,
it?
Regarding fluid and the swelling in the body, my son had the exact same thing in his upper body, around his neck and his face, around his eyes, was totally swelled up, beyond recognition almost.
My God.
And they never would do anything. They always accused him of drinking too much liquid. They had him cut down to one cup of fluid intake a day only.
Yeah.
And the fluid in his face and his throat, he looked like a bullfrog. You couldn't see his neck. Finally, after me complaining that, you know, something's wrong, they finally kicked him out of dialysis and said he was not allowed to come back until he was seen at the hospital to confirm that he did not have mumps.
Oh,
I took him immediately to the emergency room, and they said, no, he does not have mumps. And so that's how much they lack knowledge in what they're doing. My son did not swell up overnight. My son had swelling for 18 months, and they didn't do anything about it, but accused him of drinking too much fluid, and that was not
the case. I see at the dialysis center that a lot of times the nurses and techs will not pull a lot of fluid off you in retaliation for your behavior or what they focus on as your behavior. And they will pull less fluid off of you. Therefore, when you get off the machine, you may be a kilo over what you're supposed to be at. So when you come back the next time, anything you drink is going to automatically have you over, because when you left out, you were over. And they'll continuously do this until your doctor takes your dry weight up. But in actuality, your dry weight is just the same, but they're not pulling the fluid off of you, and they're doing it in retaliation. I have it done to me all the time. I have to actually have that machine turned where I can watch it. I have to tell them what my weight is. There have been times when I have had to tell them a different weight. I will say if my weight is like 96 point some kilos in actuality, I'll add a half a key on to it, or even a whole key, in order for them to pull off what I need them to pull off, because they won't do it because they're angry at me. So, yeah, you can get you can add this fluid. That's how they add the fluid to us. We can come in, they can pull it, but they won't.
Mm-hmm. See, you know, you just made me realize something when you said if they're angry at you. I should be writing more than I am. For the last 2 weeks before my brother passed, I had gotten calls from them each week at least twice saying, you have to do something, you have to do something. Your brother keeps asking us for candy and for fluid and something to eat. And I was starting to get afraid of them. I mean, I always sent him, I called it a goodie bag, you know, to occupy him, like a couple of lollipops and a couple of vanilla wafers and a little, he had the box of the special nutrition drink, you know. But they were calling me twice a week, the last at least 2 weeks. I was getting afraid of them. So I wonder if they were doing stuff to him, like you said, if they're mad at you.
I have seen horror stories. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They're lying on top of the machine, which analyzes your hemoglobin and how much fluid you have on your body.
Oh.
And I don't know if all of y'all, my center has them, and they were required to get them, but it shows exactly how much fluid is left in your body, and they have to up it in order to get all that fluid off. So maybe you should ask them to get a crit line.
I've been asking for crit line.
It shows your exact dry weight, and it pulls all your fluid off.
Not all centers have them, unfortunately. Hello, Ann. I'm so glad you're here. But not all centers have them. I'm in Virginia. In fact, I'm in Hampton Roads, Virginia. I'm in a Fresenius, a fairly new center. Our center hasn't been around, I think, maybe about three. We're probably going into our third year. We have absolutely no crit lines on any machines.
You think with a new place they'd have all that stuff?
They cost $2,000.
Exactly, but we don't.
They don't want to pay for them.
Hello?
But ours was sitting in a closet. DHH come in and made them put them on there because they were just sitting in a closet.
Could I tell y'all something?
Who's this?
This is Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Hey, how y'all doing? Hey, look here. The crip line, and like I told other people before, when you first go on dialysis, and you're at the hospital, this is what they use to get your true dry weight. This is what your nephrologist used to get your dry weight. And the problem is most people have a dry weight, and they'll keep that dry weight forever unless they're put on a crip line. And it's up to you all to tell your nephrologist, your doctor, to at least every 2 or 3 months tell somebody at the facility to put you on a crip line to get your true dry weight. Because if you got too much fluid on you, you're really gonna start having congested heart failure. This is fluid built up on you.
Oh.
It gets in your chest and makes it hard to breathe when you're laying down or walking. That's what's called congested heart failure. That's because you may have changed up. You may have extra fluid, like y'all saying, left on you. But every 2 or 3 months, you should have your dry weight challenge. Just like anything else, you should be challenged. You shouldn't keep the same dry weight. It's not going to be like that all the time. And another thing, and if you gain weight or whatever, it can be reversible. When you start, people start getting cramps when they start getting, because they're pulling off too much. It works either way. And so at least every 2 or 3 months, you're going to have to tell your doctor to change your dry weight or to put you on a crit line to get your true dry weight. That'll stop a lot of that going on. But a lot of facilities don't want to use the crit line. Like you said, they cost about $2,000. But it's worth it. It's worth your life. It's worth the pain and suffering, okay? And most everybody need to tell you. If the clinic don't do it, you need to tell your doctor. Hey, I want to challenge my driveway.
And it's done with the crip line.
Crit line.
Is Reverend Holt there?
I'm right here.
Yeah, he's got some input as far as the story, right, Carol?
Yes, he does. I'm saving the best for last, Reverend.
Why not?
Are you ready?
I've been ready.
Now, who's the best?
All right. I told him I was saving the best for last. This is a joke between he and I. He's been avoiding me. We've been chasing chicken
no,
and
who
water
is it,
instead
Robert?
Of trying to talk to me. So let's go, Reverend.
Yes, ma'am. I am Reverend Robert Coates. I have been on dialysis since 2004. And all that time I've been with Fresenius. And I'll tell you what, Fresenius and I have gone round and round. Because many of the nurses or the staff are foreign-born. And me, as an African-American male, very large, I'm about 6'2", 6'3", and I weigh in at probably about 214. They are easily intimidated by the fact that I have an education. And a lot of times when they speak to me as if they're speaking to hunting dogs, I will correct them. That's a terrible mistake in the clinic because that culture is one of retaliation. I mean, this is a horrible, horrible habit of retaliating for people making complaints or asking too many questions. I had a situation once where I came in from a trip back east, and I was overweight by 7 kilos. Well, because I had, prior to that, had made a lot of complaints about the treatment of, the treatment of the patients by the staff. Well, they only took 6 kilos. They only took 1 kilo off, and so I left that treatment and went straight to the emergency because I couldn't breathe.
Let's say that.
Mm-hmm. Later on, thank God that I'm a disabled veteran. Later on, I end up at the VA hospital in West Los Angeles. And I just couldn't breathe, and they went in and took me into the emergency, and they kept me in the place for probably, I don't know, 10 days.
What was wrong?
Drew holes in my side and withdrew 4.5 gallons of fluid. I repeat, 4.5 gallons of fluid. And I couldn't
keys.
Understand. Beg pardon?
That's 4 keys, right?
I know, that's 4.5 gallons.
Right, because it's
whatever
2.2 gallons per key. Wow.
Yeah, they told me it was 4.5 gallons. So I was very upset.
Can I ask a question? With all that fluid, did you like walk around dragging and no energy?
I was in such pain
pain.
I was just I had no energy, such that I went out and bought me a funeral suit.
Yeah.
I knew I was gonna die. And had it not been for the intervention of the VA hospital,
I knew
they would have just let me die.
You should have. Mike.
Well, didn't Fresenius terminate you?
I can't hear you.
Did Fresenius, was it Fresenius that you were terminated from, correct?
Oh, my Lord, I reported them, and the day they discovered that I had reported them, or that I had reported them to you, and that you had called them to set up a meeting in 4 days, The next day I showed up at the clinic, I was locked out, and they had me arrested. Or not arrested, they had the police show up.
And what was the reason they... What's the reason they keep the police?
They said that the technician who had been intimidating me for about a year, and I'd been complaining on him, and they never would take any action. Somehow or another, they said that I called the office and said that I was going to beat this technician, George, with my cane. And I never called. And I had another technician who would always come in and say that he would bet on George. And it was kind of like a little running joke. He said he'd bet on George because he thought George and I was going to fight. And he said that George said he was going to beat my butt. And I would just kind of go along with the program. But at one time I decided I just didn't want to play that game anymore. So I told him to stop. And on the day that I was accused of making the threat, the terrorist threat, was a day when the same technician, I'm not going to mention any names, but he was a technician, woke me from a deep sleep and said that his money was on George. And I just said, well, look, I'm tired of George intimidating me by intimidation. George would always walk as close to me as he possibly could. But if I needed some help, he never would help me. If I'm cramping, he wouldn't help. But he'd always just kind of walk by, you know, do a little drive-by. And it's like a cat that just kind of knows you don't like him, but he makes it a habit of rubbing up against you. So I would report George for that, and they wouldn't take any action. So here we are now. Now they're saying that I threatened George, which was only to cover themselves, I'm sure, to invalidate my complaint. But that's all right. I got enough on them because I would always send letters. I'd report the situation. I'd write it up. I'm a paralegal, so I know how to phrase that stuff. And my complaints were well put together. They never took any action on my complaints. And I would complain also verbally to the doctors. Doctors would always say, okay, we're going to look into it, but so much for that. I never went any farther than to promise to look into it. So anyway, we're dealing with a sick culture, sick vindictive culture.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is anything to do... Are they trained properly, or is this like giving someone a pair of scissors and calling them a hairdresser?
I think somewhere in between highly trained and no training.
Exactly. Karen, I believe you have something to say about that.
You're right, yeah. Because a PCT is a... what they call a patient care technician, their qualifications to get on the job and start working hands-on with the patients, they require a high school diploma or a GED.
That's it?
They don't even have to have CPR certification.
Can't even be a hairdresser unless you go to 500 hours at least. Jeez.
No. They go.
You can't even groom a pet.
They go in there, and it's on-the-job training, hands-on. They have the head RN, the registered nurse, that tells them how to do it, what to do, and then the PCTs do it. They do everything from cleaning, disinfecting the machines, setting up the machines, connecting the patients and disconnecting patients. They are even allowed to administer heparin, which a licensed LPN in a hospital cannot do, and they're also allowed to manipulate catheters. LPN in a hospital setting is not allowed to do that, but we get these maybe even high school dropouts with a GED, as far as we know, because that's all that they need for qualification, in there performing dialysis on these people that are unsusceptible and don't know that they are not getting cared for by people that are certified or licensed. The only person that's licensed by the state is the RN that's in charge.
And they all work under them.
And they all work under them. Yep, they do what the RN tells them to do.
All right. I want to share something with all of you. When my brother died, the shocking death, December 21st, we're still in mourning, you know, when someone lives with you, because taking care of my brother was equal to taking care of a sibling, you know, being mentally challenged. I ordered all his meds, I set up all his meds, cooked all his meals. Well, unbeknownst to me, I don't know if this was done by email or letter, but someone sent my story out to every senator in the USA. Now, I didn't know this until I started getting letters and phone calls from all these senators. And the first thing in the letter, it would be their condolences for me and my family because of my brother. And then they would go on to legally why they couldn't do anything, but how they would name people here in Massachusetts who I could turn to. So I will have to find out how it ended up my son did it all. And the one thing I felt that the point that it made was that I got my story out, you know, which I want justice mm-hmm. for Robert, because I started writing a book, Mental Health Through the Eyes of Children, because our mother was in and out of mental institutions when we were kids. But the point I'm making to everyone is I want to find out how my son did this, and maybe there could be a form letter, Arlene.
A writing campaign.
And send them out, all of us, send it out to every U.S. senator, because if I got a response as just one.
I think the sad part is, Zabeth, is that the U.S. Senate, because we had Senate hearings and they were well aware of what was going on. I think there's too much money. It's a strong lobby. And I wrote to senators. I've talked to senators. I talked to my congressman here, Raul Ruiz, who is an MD who swore that, you know, this can't be happening. He's done nothing. He's just stayed where it's safe. It's an issue in an election year or close to an election year. They don't want to get involved. And just because of the board swaps, if nothing else, they're really entrenched in our government. Their lobbies are huge. It's like when I first started, my complaint went to the U.S. Congress, went to a Nancy Andy Pearl and a William Roper, which was high up in the administrative at CMS. When President Clinton left, Bush came in, and every president, you know, I'm not saying it's his fault. We were working with the U.S. attorneys to get the EPO, which these lawyers did in private practice. But I think the sad part is Thomas Scully, who was the chair of DaVita at that time, went under Tommy Thompson as his, you know, co-administrator, who was the chair of DaVita. And then Nancy and DePorl and a William Roper went over to DaVita board and made millions of dollars in stock. Nancy Ann DePorl right now is in charge of Obamacare. She's the czarina. She's the head person. The other person, William Roper, he was in charge of the CDC. They are so entrenched that no one is going to touch it. I think the only hope we have, I think our Senate is bought and paid for. Our CMS is who I really blame, who has allowed this to happen. And for 16 years, I've made them aware of every single patient who has been harmed, terminated. I sent them a flow sheet this morning. Let's see how many people they will help. Because when a person is terminated from dialysis, you have no appeal. You have no rights. You have no rights in a clinic when one company can tell you you don't have a right to your own information and you cannot have the advocate of the choice because you don't know who's on the phone with that person, but yet that patient can go in and face a panel of five, and they call them interdisciplinary meetings. They're legal meetings. So until the patients who are fearful because you have no rights, these companies own nothing except you. They don't own the money that they've made for their pharmacy or whatever. They still are making money off you. The government or private insurance pays a small percentage. Medicare pays for a whole percentage. But yet you have one CEO who threatens to close down units if you don't sign this letter to take a $68 million bonus that year himself. And that doesn't include anybody else. It is well bought, and they go to the states, and they take the senators, state senators, to dinner, fancy parties, golf trips, and whatever. And you sit there in the chair, and then who can afford to go up against a multi-million dollar company where the CMS has not made them accountable for anything? What patient? And what, now they're doing police reports before anyone else can go to the police because you can only have one. What patient can afford $240,000 just to start? It's the 13th Amendment. I do believe it's the 13th Amendment that the patients are servitude on those machines. You can't get your results in any clinics. I mean, this is where writing to senators, I have written, I have talked to offices, I've had the governor, I've written to Kathleen Sebelius, I have written to her. Nobody cares. The only thing that is going to bring this out is we have that documentary and to do demonstrations. We have to bring public awareness. It's not going to happen in our Congress, and it's not going to happen with Medicare because they all know that this is going on and have known for 16 years.
Public awareness is the only answer to
servitude. I want to make it's different but the same. Mental health, there was nothing in the 50s or 60s. And with the help of the NAMI, National Alliance of Mentally Ill, being formed, it finally brought a lot of stigma and shame out of the closets.
Right.
But there's still people suffering from that, and I'm going to be putting on an event with, there's a group called, it's a members of musicians, and there's something to be proud of on their website. On the front page, they say, we're celebrating mental health through our music. But that's not the point I want to make. Every time, like here, you'll get an email from the NAMI office saying, okay, tomorrow up at City Hall, they're going to vote on such and such a thing that will make more a homelessness amongst, you know, mentally challenged people. And they'll email us the names and the numbers of who we are to call. And as just regular people, we're not senators or anything, and we make calls. And I call, whether it was Elizabeth Warren's office, sometimes you get a member in their office, sometimes a tape. And you just say, I say who I am, that I'm a member of NAMI. I understand you're going to vote on such and such a thing, and our answer is no. Now, that's why I would like in numbers for everyone you have, and maybe there's
right.
other groups that've got to be formed like NAMI did and went national.
Well, I think
it makes more
different.
Voices, and from the
right.
patients who act, you know, they feel like.
The
I just
patients
like,
are
just
afraid.
The response
to
I got, not knowing my son did that. As far as I'm concerned, it brought my story out, and I'm planning on doing it again.
Right, but I think that the trouble here is that a lot of patients are afraid to complain. If you complained, you're out on the streets.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you can't get a group of people. They're anonymous. They're scared to death. You know, they'll call on the line and then turn around and say, gee, you know, I'll take care of it. And then they're dumped.
But how about those of us like Jewel and Karen who've already lost people? They could be a voice like me.
Well, what I have done is to give the documentary guy who's doing the documentary, your names. Yes, it is getting out. But the patients still are petrified and scared to death.
I'm talking about those who've already lost people. They've got nothing to lose, you know. But
right.
but they could be a voice, like I'm being a voice, writing and everything.
I think we have to train the public on what it's like to be in a clinic. Nobody believes what's going on.
No,
I told
my friends, and not that they think I'm lying, but they find it no, sir, not in this country. That's just
right.
how they answer me.
Right.
Well,
no,
see,
sir,
dialysis, because of the population that they serve, we don't get any type like cancer. We don't get any type of publicity, and our patients are so quiet because they are afraid and because they're not educated on dialysis itself. And if you don't educate yourself on dialysis itself, you sit there and you take whatever treatment you think you're getting.
Exactly.
And so that gives power to the caregivers. That gives them power, and that's a fearful thing to think of the type of people you're giving power to that's taking care of you.
Well, I have a double-edged sword, so I have many things to, you know, to get the word
out.
Can
I say one thing? Can I say this? A lot of people realize.
The problem is, are you getting the word out?
When you get kicked out of a dialysis center, it's a death notice because there's nowhere else for you to go. Simple as that. When you get kicked out, you're blackballed. You got a death sentence. You don't have long to live unless you get treatment. You can go to ER for so long. That's it. Until you find a place that will take you. And most of the time when these large companies get rid of you, they blackball you. If Vita blackball you, Fresenius will blackball you. You have to move out of state, find a new nephrologist and all this, unless you're going to die. Simple as that. It's no game.
I have a
it's
feeling
no
they would have done that to my brother, except that I was his advocate. They knew I was connected to NAMI, National Alliance for Mentally Ill, and I was his legal health care proxy and his legal durable power of attorney. But I felt that would have happened to him if it was.
They would get rid of you. It's easy for them to get rid of you. It's easy. They don't have no conscience. just drop you. You dead. You know, they don't care. And the thing about it, they're going to blackball you so you can't get treatment. So, you know, people got to realize this. This is not a game. It's not like you can get kicked out and go somewhere else. It's not easy to go somewhere else.
I don't know. Right there should be a defense of some kind.
Well, the thing is Medicare has known about this, known about this for 16 years. And even with the Senate hearings, they found a patient population at risk, and they've done nothing.
Not one thing.
And every law personally fought for, they have gotten around. It's like your doctors. I went up to Medicare. We had a meeting in Maryland, and I said, well, how come doctors are getting paid and they don't even see their patients? Patients have actually seen their doctor, even know where their office is. All they do is sign off on a chart. They saw you, but they saw you, but that's it.
Right. That's it.
I mean, we're having amputations. It is nothing more, and I do believe in my heart, it's not about health care. It's about profit. And servitude, the 13th Amendment, I do believe that is what's happening, because you can't go to other clinics as easy as you used to.
That's right.
And there are two major corporations that's running.
Actually, DCI is getting pretty bad, too.
Who?
Which surprises.
Wow.
DCI. I'm having a lot of problems with DCI.
I haven't heard of that one.
Oh.
They're
supposed to be, have such a good reputation. But we have two terminated patients, and I think one of them has passed. And they wrote her up to having schizophrenic and paranoia. Another social worker called me and said that was not true. And when you go to the emergency room, you can spend up to 12 hours to be denied, or you can be denied and they'll give you some KXLate, let you vomit and have diarrhea to get rid of the fluid, but, you know, that's it.
You're on your own. That's it.
Tell patients not to go to come to the hospital anymore. Go somewhere else.
That's right.
Go to another hospital.
That's right.
And this is America.
Hospitals, dialysis centers are run by the major corporations.
Mm-hmm. Or try to get it in the news or radio show, something.
We have tried. We had a story that we had had a newspaper edit on a newspaper follow, and 60 Minutes was supposed to pick it up, and Washington Post. Washington Post has had documents, and I've gone through three catastrophic documents. I've got documents that this industry has no clue that I have. But the point is that you can be documented, and it's like somebody will turn around and say, gee, turn us into the health department. Go ahead. They're not going to do anything. People do not realize there is no sanctions in this industry. They are accountable to no one.
Nobody.
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt you right now, but this is Jewel. I'm going to have to sign off. I had a knee replacement, and I'm laid up in bed. So.
Oh, well, thank you.
Good luck, Jewel.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And I hope I helped y'all. I mean, I hope we all helped each other a little bit. Y'all have a blessed day.
Well, thank you so much, Jewel. You too, dear.
Bye-bye.
Well, I'll find different ways, whatever it takes, because I have the best story, the best of, the name was Joshua Messier. He was at the state hospital here in Massachusetts back in 2007. I don't know how his mother knew that he was mishandled and died there, and the state here of Massachusetts changed his death certificate twice. But I'm on the phone with the mother, Lisa Brown, with Perseverance, because she, this year, kind of won her case from 2007. But the thing of it is, the next stage is to have someone arrested. But all of a sudden, Martha Coakley, our attorney general, who put her back to this case, and like you said, this year is what do you call it? You know, they're up for elections. So all of a sudden, she's finding a new interest, and she wants to see who can be arrested. Isn't that a joke?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to have to sign off, Carol, and everybody.
Okay.
But
I will
thank you
too.
For being on the show. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
All right, thank you.
Carol?
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to share my story. I had the same problem. They've been not letting me take off my fluids because they had a new tech start, and I wouldn't, when she bled me out, I said, oh, you got jumped into the gang now. You're part of the DaVita gang because she bled me out. I haven't been bled out in a long time, but she did that to be part of the group, you know, part of the gang. And so now I come in, I'm 5 kilos over, they take off two. So I'm going to get them on Friday. I'm going to lie about it like you do. And then I also do, I take an herbal tea that causes me to have diarrhea. And so I get the water out that way. But there's something else. They do retaliate that way if you, you know, complain or talk about them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so
everybody,
I just wanted to share
we had
that
a
with
great
you.
Show. I appreciate everything, Charles. Thank you for calling in. And
all
thank
right.
everyone. Is anyone else out there have any last words?
Well, I'm just so proud
like
to know you. And I want to encourage you. This is Reverend Hope. I mean, I want to encourage you in your fight. I don't want you to become weary and well-doing. God bless you.
God bless you too, Reverend.
God bless you too.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.